In 1984, a young Killarney man, in the company of the likes of Micheál O'Hare and John Hume, accepted the People of the Year Award in Dublin for courage in the face of grave illness. A lot has passed under the bridge since then. That man is with me in studio tonight. Pat O'Connell, you're very welcome to Terrace Talk.
Thank you, Neil Beechey.
Yeah, nice to have you, Pat. We did a bit of running ourselves together the one time, didn't we?
We did indeed, myself, yourself and Kearney.
That's right, yeah. We used to jog around Muckross and Dynas and
right,
old places like that.
They were the good old days.
They were the good old days. Pat, let's start off up along the line. 3 years ago, you had a bad illness, something affected you. Your whole life practically changed and you've fought hard and fought tough since. Bring us back, Pat, to that time 3 years ago.
Right. Just over 3 years ago, I went to America to watch the marathon rather than run it this time. I wasn't feeling great, so I went over to watch the marathon. When I came home, I had a big weight loss, and I actually collapsed in America one day just walking on the street. And I just remember falling over a curb, and that was it, and I finished up in hospital. So I was there for, I think, 4 days, and Fitzgerald, his name is, I can't think of his first name, but he'd be Esther Ahern's husband, anyway, Fitzgerald is his name. Dennis Fitzgerald, he used to own Fitzgerald's pub one time, and he actually took good care of me while I was in hospital. And he sent me home in the plane, and there were talks at the time wondering would I be able to make it home in the plane or not. So there was actually a doctor on the plane, and he sat near me. When I came home, I was brought into hospital, and at that particular time they wondered did I have liver cancer, because I was jaundiced and had a big weight loss, as I said earlier on. So I was in St. Luke's at that particular time, because of having cancer earlier on in my life. They thought maybe it was the cancer had come back again. So after being there for a month and tested for all types of cancer, nothing showed up, but they thought there was a cyst in my liver. So I was sent to St. Luke's, Vincent's Hospital, yeah, in Dublin. And there they discovered that I had liver failure. So there was no great panic at the time. My doctor there, which is John Hagerty, his mother came from Dingle, so he's, I suppose, half a Kerry man. And he said that maybe eventually I might have to have a liver transplant. And I didn't particularly take great notice of it at that stage. And I was sent home, and I remember, you know, I was getting tireder and tireder and getting more jaundice. So my wife noticed me, and she could see me getting worse. But I think when you are a runner, as Frank Considine said to me last week, he said, you know, you don't feel pain, because there's always pain when you're running, especially if there's marathons, even ordinary running, you know, there's always pain attached to it. And you get used to pain, and you don't imagine you're as sick as you really are. Because the people looking on at you suffer more watching you. So I went to the hospital, to Vincent's, and they actually found my liver was swollen quite a bit. So I was brought into hospital, and I was put on the waiting list for a liver transplant. At that particular time, I was waiting, I think, about 4 months for a transplant. And I remember I was put into a ward, and there was two people in front of me. And this particular day, one guy's name was Kevin, that's all I remember. He was about my own age at the time. And Dr. Hagen, he told me I could go to town for the afternoon and just, you know, kind of get out of the hospital atmosphere. I was good enough to walk around. And this Kevin, I remember he going to the bathroom before I left. And when I came back, maybe 3 hours later, he was laid out in the bed. He was dead.
See, a young man.
Again, at that particular time, he was 41. He'd only be about 44 or 5 now.
Yeah.
Younger than myself. And the other man was taken from the ward, and I never again saw him. So the hospital actually said to me that they were two difficult cases, they were complicated. But it was an awful bad start for me in the hospital.
Was it long, didn't Pat, before you had your transplant?
Yeah, they, that would be have been in, I'd say, late November, going on early December. So on the 9th of January, actually, 1999, my liver came for me, so I had my liver transplant. It was a big experience. I mean, it was a tough station. You know, it was like being hit by a tank. I remember waking up and just looking around me and glad that I made it. My wife was there all the time with me, which was, you know, very helpful at that time. And my daughter, Justine, and my other daughter, Audrey came from England, and of course, Melissa. So all four of them were there with me. And it took me a long time to recover. I was about 10 weeks in hospital. And in the meantime, my wife's mother passed away while I was in hospital. She was 92. She died reading a book, so she had a long life, but she had a long, healthy life. And again, that was a big, you know, burden on my wife.
And of course, Pat, everything went well then up until that. You came home then, you recovered well, and last summer then, things began to deteriorate, unfortunately, again.
Right. I came home and I recovered. I was slower recovering, but I had a good 2.5 years. You know, there was little downs, but there was more ups than downs, you know. So, again, I got jaundice, and I was examined at the hospital, and my medication, my anti-rejection drugs were changed. So I knew there was something serious going on. And at that particular time, the doctor said to me, look, he said, it looks like you'll have to have another transplant. So this was a big blow to me. I'm wondering how I get through a second one. Though people have had, you know, transplants and second transplant and come through them. So I thought there was still hope. But nevertheless, the more you have, the weaker you are. And it's a major operation. It's 11-hour operation, so it's the biggest operation any person can ever have, supposed to be, that's what I'm told.
It's not usual, I'd imagine, Pat, for a person to have a second liver transplant.
No, it's not.
It's rare.
Well, some people do. I think I was told, anyway, at least I was the only one in Kerry here to have a second one so far. Whether that is true or not, I can't. I'm sure there's some people in Kerry here that have transplants already. I recovered slowly, as I say, from the last one. And this time, I was sent home for a while again. My wife could see me going downhill. I used to walk in Muckross Drive. I used to walk up to the top of the hill and walk down again, but it was a drag. And my wife saw me, and she knew that I was going downhill fast, like the first time. And I hadn't an appointment for another fortnight, so she rang the hospital and brought my appointment forward. When I went there, I was literally rushed into a room.
And Pat, before we go on from there, and we'll have to go backwards to the beginning of your life, we'll go for a short break.
Pat, message in here, Pat. Pat O'Connell is a great and loyal friend for the last 25 years, and the people of Kerry, and indeed Ireland, should be very proud of his achievements. We all could take a lesson from Pat in his courage, stamina, and dedication to help cancer sufferers. I wish Rosemary, Justina, Audrey, Melissa all the very best in the future. Regards from Kearney, Aileen, and Charles Gavin O'Brien, an old running mate of yours.
Indeed, a very good friend of mine, Kearney, and so Aileen, and the family.
A good man for the crack. A good man for the crack. Now, we're going to the comment line because, Pat, last Friday night in the Gleneagle, of course, you got a special merit award before 500 people. It was a marvellous, wonderful night. Marvellous, wonderful night. And there was a great occasion at the end of the night when the Supreme Sports Star of the Year was announced. And he was the one and only, the great John Lennon. He's the top sportsman in Kerry. He joins us in the line. John, you're very welcome to the programme.
Hello, Richie. Hello, Pat. Hello, John. How are you?
Pat, John, you said something to me after last night. I was congratulating you, and you said, I felt very humbled, you said, to be alongside Pat O'Connell. Explain yourself, John.
Well, I suppose, it was something I said to somebody on the stage that night, I think, we've all our achievements were lifted on the night, and I think having listened to what Pat O'Connell and the battle that Pat O'Connell has gone through, I think, I must say, my achievements, I think I felt very humble anyway by them,
Yeah, what he has achieved, as you say, it would make all of us feel very, very small, John. I mean, all sportsmen carry renown for their adversity in the face of injuries and everything. But this man has achieved something different, hasn't he?
He has indeed. I mean, it's a totally new thing indeed. I mean, we're always complaining about an injured leg or whatever and all this type of thing. And all those things are very, very small in comparison to the mountain that Pat has had to climb.
Yeah, and his fundraising, which will be coming along the way, John, he has raised thousands and thousands of pounds. An exemplary person.
Absolutely, and there's no doubt about it. I mean, he's proven that time and time again, and, even on the running field, I mean, Pat wasn't just out there making up the numbers. Pat was no mean achiever in his running.
And, of course, John, his late brother, Sean, was an outstanding athlete, and you knew him well.
Yeah, Sean ran with the same club as myself, the race club in Castle Island, and Sean and myself were great friends, travelled to a lot of races together, and quite often we roomed together at races up and down the country.
Pat, John Linehan, a fair old athlete himself.
Oh, indeed, it was very nice watching the last night. It brought all the running back to me. I think I ran up Cairn Toole one time. I walked a lot of it, but I think looking at John the last night, really it was fantastic to watch him. And I knew that he knew my brother Sean, and Sean always spoke highly of him.
John, before we let you go, supreme sports star in Kerry for the year, does that cap your career for you? What does it mean to you?
Well, I think it was a fantastic night. I suppose the Kerry Sports Awards always is a fantastic night, It was. It'll definitely be one of the highlights of my career when I look back on my career,
Yeah. And I think somebody remarked to me after, John, that you're going concentrating maybe on cross-country for the year. Is that right?
Well, I'm not doing as much mountain running the coming year. I may get back into the following year for the Worlds in Alaska, but I'm more or less taking a year out from some of the competition mountain running, concentrate more on the cross country for the moment, and maybe some road running during the summer.
Well, John, listen to me, the best of luck to you anywhere in your career, and thanks for joining us in Terrace Talk.
Thank you very much, Richie.
Thank you, John. The great John Linehan there.
God bless, John.
Pat, before we went to the break, we were talking. You were rushed back into St. Vincent's Hospital in Dublin, and your liver transplant was failing rapidly, and you were in grave condition, weren't you?
That's right, and I had chronic liver rejection. So when I went to the hospital, I was actually rushed into my room and fed intravenously. They said at that stage that I looked so bad and poor that they were worried about giving me a transplant. They had to feed me fairly well first. So that was on a Wednesday. A Thursday passed, and Friday morning, the coordinator came up to me at 10 to 7. It was the one night that my wife never brought the phone into the bedroom. We always brought the phone into the bedroom at night in case I'd get a call. You can get a call any time, and you've only so many hours to get there to the hospital for a transplant. And she knew I was safe when I was in the hospital. So the coordinator said to me, are you awake, Pat? So I said, I am. At that particular time, I had a dreadful itch, which comes with the liver problems, and on my back and on my legs. And I couldn't sleep at night. You were itching all the time. And I had it pretty bad. So I said I didn't sleep in almost 6 months. So she said, well, the reason I'm here, she said, is you're having a transplant at 8:15 this morning. And I remember I jumped out on the floor in front of her with delight, because I knew my time was limited. And the other three people in the ward thought they were terrified, because they were waiting for transplants.
Pat, when you say your time was limited, I think the doctors gave you, it was a case you had to have the liver very quickly.
Well, yes, this came all of a sudden. And I, with liver problems, if you're waiting for the person who's waiting for a liver transplant, we'll say on Thursday, and if you come in Wednesday night and you're worse than he or she is, you'll jump the queue. So I think that was my luck. I jumped the queue, and I had my liver transplant at 8:15 that morning.
Another 11-hour operation.
Another 11-hour operation. My wife wasn't even there. She couldn't. We couldn't contact her because she didn't bring the phone into the bedroom. And my next-door neighbour, John O'Leary, my daughter in Dublin, Justine, which is a nurse, rang him. So he came knocking at all the windows and got Rosemary up. I was over the transplant by the time she got there. But my daughter, Justine, was with me and brought me down to the theatre. So she wished me luck, and I said, I hope I'll be back. So I had my operation, and I'm not sure, was it a day or 2 days later? The coordinator again just called me, woke me up, and I remember I looked at the four corners of the room, and I said, I've made it.
Psychologically, to have to go through those things, people like us can't understand that. Like, I mean, how do you go through it?
Well, it's amazing. Everyone wants to live. There's no one want to die. And you'll put up with anything rather than give up. And again, there's a challenge to it. It's almost like running another marathon. You're hoping you'll get over it. And, you know, when you are knocked out and have your operation, that's the easiest part of it. It's waking up into pain and suffering again after. But once I wake up, I can put up with everything else. And at that, the second transplant, I actually recovered very, very quick.
And I must say that everyone, the hundreds of people that met you the last night at the sports star, they were all saying how well and how fit and how great you look. Pat O'Connell, you were born in, you're a Killarney man.
I am indeed, out from the park.
Tell us where we were born, how many were in the family here. Tell, talking about yourself.
Right.
I was hearing about your running, but I'd like to hear about Pat O'Connell's family.
Well, my mother was King from Curra, from Barnfield in Curra. That was her maiden name, and she got married to my father, John O'Connell. They had six children. I would have been fourth in the line. Maria, I'm sure you know Maria, as many people did.
Pat? I had my eye on Mary one time. So we'll come to Mary soon.
Right.
Beautiful girl. We'll come to her soon. Yeah,
yes.
Go on. Mary was one, yeah.
Mary, my brother Dermot was next. Dermot lives in Ahadom. He's married to Mary. And my sister Hannah Mary then is married to Dermot. She's the third. And I'm the fourth. And I have a sister Margaret in Limerick. She's married to Paddy O'Connell. And my late brother Sean, he was the youngest in the family.
Mary, 1972, tragedy struck the family. Mary was only 28 years of age, and she developed Hutchinson's disease. Talk to us about that part of it.
Right. Mary was 28, but 4 years prior to that, she, again, like myself, had she got a lump in her neck, which was a swollen gland. But at that time, my mother was told she had cancerous glands, and Mary was obviously told, but she always kept it a secret, as my mother did. My mother never told Mary what she had, and Mary never told my mother. That time cancer wasn't talked about. It was like the plague almost. That's over 30 years ago. And Mary had a hectic life for 4 years. She died after 4.5 years. I mean, she was in ladies football, camogie, basketball. She was involved in everything, and no one ever knew she had cancer until the end. I always remember Seamus McConville of the Kerryman always said in an article that he wrote about Mary after she died, it was a flower that blooms no more. And he said Mary packed into her 28 years of fullness that many will never spend in a life two or three times longer.
I remember her well, staring above in the parish hall in the basketball. She loved the basketball,
didn't she?
And then 1977, Pat, you developed Hodgkin's yourself, and that was unusual because for two in one family, that was a big, huge blow to the family again.
Yeah, again, I got a cold sore on my lip, which I was very lucky I did, and that infected my glands, and I had a large gland that swelled in my neck, and it was operated on. There was a biopsy done on it, and it showed up straight away that I had Hodgkin's, which is cancer of the lymph glands. And I think at that particular time we were the only two in the one family having that type of cancer, which was quite unusual. And again, I went to St. Luke's Hospital in Dublin, where they specialise in cancer. I always feel if Mary had went there, that she may be alive today, because Hodgkin's was very serious in those days. today it is one of the better cancers they have. It's very treatable, like a lot of cancers. And I remember, it took her 4.5 years to die.
Yeah. And of course, you went and you had your treatment, and Pat,
yes.
And you came home, and I'll tell you what we'll do is, that then had a profound effect on your life, because you made the decision, we'll be going for a break now, and when we come back, we'll talk about the decision you made to take up marathon running, right, to rise on, and you met... You got involved with the government, even. You got involved with the with the Taoiseach and all. We'll come to all that because we're going for a short break. I wish Pat the very best of luck. Never complains as usual by Pat, Willie and Trina, St. Margaret's Road.
Yes.
You probably know them all, Pat. Yeah. Steve and Mary Kennedy at Beaufort. Wish Pat the best of luck. Steve and Mary. So Steve the runner.
That's exactly.
The little pigtail.
I know you were talking about
the Killarney Looks Goods Committee wishes Pat the best of luck. His garden is always an inspiration to us. You great pride in your garden, your house, Pat.
Well, that's my favourite pastime now, yes.
Yeah. Sheila in Park Road rang to wish Pat the best of luck and to be sure to call to her and to bring the bottle of wine. She didn't say whether it was red or white. Pat? You went in, you had your treatment, lost a lot of weight when you got Hodgkin's disease. Talk about it.
Right. I had an operation at that particular time, and I had the cobalt radium treatment, which was 5 treatments for 5 days a week for 5 weeks. And that, you get a very nauseous feeling after the radium treatment. It's very severe on you, but I believe it's changed now, you know, because you can get medication to take away the sickness as such.
It's improving all the time.
It is, yeah. So I lost 4.5 stone in weight at that particular time. And I remember saying to Rosemary while I was in hospital in St. Luke's that if I get out of here, I'll do something to raise money for cancer. And when I did get out, it took me quite a bit to recover. I started running with yourself, Kearney, Ty Bryan, who isn't with us anymore, Frank Dial, Pogs, a lot of Killarney people. I can't think of half the names now. So we used to go every second day running almost, sometimes every day. And in 1981, I ran my, I think it was 82 actually, my first marathon. It was the biggest day of my life. And I went fundraising around door to door from the people of Killarney. And of course, the response I got from the people in Killarney at the time was fantastic.
And Pat, you ran between 1981 and 96, you ran 22 marathons in Dublin, London, Boston, Cork, New York, Chicago, and many more. And you raised over £500,000. Now, why did you raise the money? You did most of the collecting yourself, and who did you give the money to?
I gave the money to St. Luke's and the Cork region because I suppose it was my duty to give it to the Cork region simply because it's the hospital that served all Munster. And it was mostly Munster people who were giving me these donations, so I felt I had to. Though I was cured in St. Hospital, Luke's Hospital myself, I felt I owed them a fair bit. It was about £500,000 I raised at the time.
And Pat, one of the charities that came in to help you, which wasn't a charity, the Ring of Kerry Cycle, was only starting off at the time. And now they have been going continuously, and Dennis Ganey and his men. Dennis Ganey, by the way, got the Merit Award last year before you. Well, he's on the line out. Have a little chat with us. Dennis, you're welcome to the programme.
Evening, wish you.
How you doing, my friend?
Not too bad.
Now, sir, what have you to say about this man here alongside me?
How are you, Pat?
Hello, Dennis, how are you?
Not too bad. What can I say about Pat O'Connell?
Yeah.
God.
Not an easy thing.
No. I suppose Pat is one in a million, really, and I'm delighted. I met him outside the last night in the Gleneagle, and I think I said it to him, he looks 100% better than when I met him about a month before that. And I'm delighted for him, and, of course, for his family and all. They were all great out there the last night, and we're looking forward to seeing him walking up along Woodland with his dogs shortly. Pat has been, I suppose, Pat was one of the first fundraisers around Killarney that made a big impact on things. And I remember going back a good few years we'd done the Ray Kelly Charity Cycle, I think it was 2 years.
Two years, Dennis.
That's right, and it was a help. I remember we went up to St. Luke's Hospital in Cork, myself and Cahal and a couple more, and we had a nice day up there, and it's a great experience to work with the likes of Pat for cancer, of course. And as I said, I wish him all the best, and I can see him coming from strength to strength every day.
Dennis, and listen, thanks for joining, and keep up the good work yourself.
Thanks very much.
Thank you, Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis, for your nice comments.
Of course, Pat, you ran so much. You ran over 50,000 miles, which is nearly equivalent, in my estimation, running around the world twice. And the money you gave, it was being taxed at the time. But you started education, and you got on to Dick Spring and Garrett Fitzgerald and a lot of the politicians at the time. Talk to us about the VAT side.
Right. Now, I went to Boston to run a marathon. And Gareth Fitzgerald and his wife were staying in the Omni Parker House Hotel in Boston. And I used to do a lot of running at the time with Pat Curran, who was the Consul General of Ireland in Boston. So Pat arranged a meeting for me with the Taoiseach at the time and his wife. So I was brought to the Parker House, and I had a meeting with them. And at that particular time, I can't remember what money I had raised, but the money I used to raise was going for equipment for the treatment of cancer. I always felt that early detection is the cure for cancer, and equipment was needed more than comfort. You know, you're never comfortable when you're sick, and I felt getting equipment, which the government didn't provide and should provide at that time. St. Luke's were slightly ahead, I think, with equipment. But of course, knowing the government, I think Ireland finishes outside Dublin. And I told Gareth Fitzgerald and his wife, with the Consul General at the time, that the first piece of equipment, I hadn't enough money raised to pay the VAT on the first piece of equipment, which was a linear accelerator. Machine at that particular time cost, I think, 240,000. That's some years ago. So he was rather taken back. And he said he'd do something for me. And his wife assured me, she was in her wheelchair at the time, she said that Garrett would see after my worldly cause. Now, it took about 12 months with all the red tape, to solve that problem. So he reduced it from 23% down to 10%. And he said the 10% had to stand because that was EEC law at the time. But it was scrapped a few years later. And I think someone else got in the bandwagon after that and took the credit for all of it. But that didn't bother me once the VAT was scrapped. That's all I wanted.
Was that a very important part of your life, Pat, to achieve getting the VAT down from 25 to 10%? Because at least the money that you were making was being well spent.
Well, it was. I mean, the people who were giving me money were already taxing it. And the government were coming along a second time and taxi it when I gave it to the hospitals.
And of course, Pat, you had every kind of a conceivable idea going for raising money around at that particular time. We just heard from Dennis there talking about the Ringing Sherry. But there was a cow by the name of Big Bertha.
That's right.
A 42-year-old cow from Sneave. And Big Bertha raised money for Pat O'Connor, isn't that right?
He did indeed. Well, Dennis, I must admit now, Donny Riney was very much involved in that, and as great credit to Donny, God rest him, he's gone now too. And of course, Jerome, the owner of Big Bertha. It made many thousands of pounds.
And you got him to reverse the bus around the Ringing Sherry.
Exactly.
John MacDonald.
Oh, yes. John MacDonald was a very nice person, too.
And the guard from Clenmount,
sure. Oh, the Killarney Guard. They did it on a few occasions, actually. You know, there were so many people fundraising, I can't...
Courtney's pub lot has been renovated now at the moment. They've had it knocked down, I hope they leave the front on it. There was a big night in Courtney's pub, Sean Grady and a few of the politicians, and a crowd modest, they had a singing night there.
Yeah, there was several things like that, there were so many.
And the Killarney Barman were involved in raising money, I won't get them all in, so I don't expect everything. And of course, you ran from door to door. I remember you calling to my door one day, you were going to Samaritan.
I'm sure I did many times.
And the marathon was on, we'd say, next week.
Right.
And I remember you coming in, sitting down, you could hardly walk, you were exhausted.
Yeah, it takes an awful toll out of you because you're calling to houses. Sometimes, you know, people just don't have money handy and you're putting a lot of pressure on people. And I always felt that when you knock at a door, people feel, when when they knew I had been through cancer, etc., that they always had to donate. And you're putting a lot of pressure on people, but people always coughed up. They were very good.
Pat, the response from people in general, it was enormous, really, wasn't it?
Ah, you could count in one hand the people that refused. There was no refusals, really. People in Killarney were very forthcoming. I mean, I can remember running several times, and cars and people walk even would put money into my hand. That was in the early stages when I went running first, and that happened. Seven times.
I bumped into Denny Casey, the advertiser, today. He said, the Killarney, our own Denny Casey, the Killarney advertiser. He said to wish you the best and to tell you he was asking for you. And he would, naturally enough, he was high in praise for you. But the advertiser and all the local papers and all, I've no doubt you wouldn't want to forget them.
Oh, God.
The advertiser in particular and all the local papers, they really pushed your cause.
They did indeed. There was no
Radio Kerry there, didn't they?
No, there wasn't. The Kingdom, the Kerryman, the advertiser, I remember the Kerryman, Seamus McConville and Brian Cunningham, on my first marathon in America, they arranged a trip for me to America and sponsored me to the 1983 marathon in New York. And from there on, I had free trips to America, any place Aer Lingus were going.
And you ran from pub to pub in America, Pat. You ran, you kept collecting over there, and you met some great people. There was associations from all over Kerry, and they looked after you there, didn't they?
They did indeed. There's too many to mention. I couldn't go through them all. A lot of them forgotten, but I got great support from the Irish people in America.
Pat, before we go for another quick break, we're at 0643-4444. What disappointment was there at that, but just a quick one, what disappointment was there for you at that particular time of your life when you were raising money and running all those marathons? Was there anything that stood out and you said, gee, that's desperate, I know I'm disappointed with that? Did anything happen? Did anyone kind of refuse to give you money? Or was the VAT thing?
The VAT thing was a big thing, and it was a great boost for me to get it reduced from that amount, but I was still annoyed paying 10%. That was still a bit much.
What drove you, Pat? What kept you going?
I think it was pure determination. And, of course, again, I got very addicted to running. But I must say, I enjoyed the fundraising. It was very hard. It exhausted me. Any time I was running a marathon, I was exhausted before the marathon, after.
We're going for another quick break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about the bald eagle.
Oh.
All listeners know what I'm talking about. Talking to Pat O'Connell, James Looney of the Park Road. Listen to this. Wants to know what age Pat was when he started smoking woodbines at the back of the house.
School age, James.
School age. I started smoking woodbines myself down to the main, down the sawmills. And I remember I smoked my first one with the Johnstons. And I nearly choked to death. The old woodbines.
Well,
Coffinales, they was calling Pat. Coffinales. Sheila and John Kelly Kishlock wants to wish Pat the best. That's John Kelly, who's bringing out the history of St. Finan's. He's the man behind the whole thing. A listener wants to know, where is Big Bertha now, I suppose?
Well, the last I heard, she was in Jerome's kitchen stuffed.
But are you serious?
He has died since, so I don't know.
Yeah. Peg Looney, Orchids Close, rang to wish you the best, Pat. And Debbie and Diane Dolan, Woodlawn Park, rang to wish Pat the best. We're going to the comment line because you're a great Killarney man, and we're going to talk to the chairman of the Killarney Urban District Council, another great Killarney man, Mick Gleeson. Mick, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Ish.
I know, like you and everyone else, you're proud of this man.
Oh yes, indeed. But first of all, hello, Pat.
Hello.
And I hope that you are feeling very well, and we all wish you a happy and a healthy 2002. That's more important than anything else.
Thank you very much indeed,
and
Mick.
You have endured much, but you have shown enormous courage and determination confronting those health problems. In that way, I believe you have been an inspiration to very many other people who have gone through bad times, and they saw that if one is prepared and determined enough, that there's hope at the end of a maybe difficult journey. And I think very importantly that you've shown that, as I think you mentioned earlier in the program, the ever-improving expertise in the medical profession is capable of wonderful achievements and can bring people out of the deepest trough.
Yeah. Mick, listen, thanks for joining us.
All right, Wish.
Thank you indeed, Mick. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yes, Mick?
I think it's very important. Pat has a great affinity with nature, having worked in the National Park, of course. And as I think was mentioned in the programme, his home and his garden are of the highest order, and they're regular winners in Killarney, looking good, and I think they were the overall winner one year.
Right.
And I hope we will all follow that example, and that in the very near future, because of the example of people such as him, that Killarney will be the overall winner of the Tidy Towns.
Yes, indeed.
Good luck, Pat, in the
thank you, Mick, indeed. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, indeed, Mick. By the way, before I forget, I must say, Brian Hurley is on sound in Tralee. I always forget this at the end of the programme, so I'm not going to leave for Gotterin. Brian Hurley done great work in Tralee. Margaret Sheehan there, busy outside taking the calls. That woman, she's in and out the door, she's coming and going. And who's on here? Our own Sean Hurley.
Indeed, Sean.
Not he's wearing two hats tonight, because he's on sound, and he's also producing the show, and he's keeping me a small bit in order. Pat, of course, you were a wildlife ranger.
Yes.
And quick one about the bald eagle. Tell us a quick one about it.
Right, that was in...
And then the people who helped you. Talk away.
Sure, right. That was in 1987. This bird landed just near Tralee. And it was... we went over to see it one particular day, myself and Don McMahon and Tim O'Donoghue, the head wildlife ranger in Tralee. We went to see it, and you could see at the... looking at the bird, it was waterlogged, and indeed it was exhausted. So we chased it along some few fields, and after every two or three fields, it would land. And myself and Tim kept running after it, and eventually we caught up with it and grabbed it. It was just completely exhausted. It lost about 7 pounds in weight. Now, the experts maintain it came across through the air currents. I always maintain myself that it probably was blown off course and perched on a ship. I had it for 6 weeks in my house and fed it on pigeon and venison. I had a lot of these things in the deep freeze because lots of wild birds of prey were handed in to me. And I just let them go eventually. But it was sent back to America, so I was flown back with two members of the department. And I had it quarantined in New York and came back home 2 days later.
Who did you hand it over to, Pat?
It was quarantined to the Wildlife Service.
Oh, yes,
yeah, but then it was sent to Boston to be released. Margaret Heckler was the American ambassador to Ireland at the particular time, so she insisted that the bird would be released in Boston, so it was released in Quabbin Reservoir. So I had to go out there on February and release it.
And I hope somebody doesn't ring in and ask us where's the bird now.
Well, actually, I was told last year that it has ringed the bird, and it is back in the Quabbin Reservoir again. It migrates in the...
Are you serious?
Yes, so I'm told. Yeah, well, of course, eagles live for many, many years.
Pat, what's your philosophy of life?
Well, I just take every day as it come, and if sickness come at you, you just make the best of it and hope for the best.
You have four fabulous women in your life.
I'm trying to wonder who they are. I have my wife and my three daughters, correct.
Yeah, you have indeed.
And indeed, they've been a great inspiration to me and stood by me as the wildlife rangers in the Killarney National Park, and indeed the outside rangers have been very good.
Who were a big help to you, Pat?
Well, of course, I left my job about 4 years ago, and Dan Kelleher, the superintendent of the Killarney National Park, was a great inspiration to me, and indeed all the rangers kept close contact with me and taking me out when I recovered from my illness. He was taking me out around the park.
Pat, very quickly, Eugene Ferris was on to say hello. Cousin Noreen, Dave and Cora, very proud of you. Thanks, Pat. And Michael from Fieries, Peter and Betty O'Leary, Upper Park Road, Peter Ashton Dingle, Tommy and Mary Regan from O'Connell's Terrace, Michael O'Leary from Countess Grove. We're going to play out in the song because it is a very special meaning for you. Your brother Sean died. And Pat, while we're playing out, Pat, let me say first of all, before we introduce the song, that it's been a great pleasure and a wonderful honour to have you on Terrace Talk, because surely you're an inspiration to thousands. Long may you enjoy the four lovely ladies in your life and enjoy the beauty of your beloved Killarney, because I know you love Killarney. This song, Betty Milder singing The Wings Beneath Your Feet. It's all special memories. Why, Pat?
Yeah, The Wind Beneath My Wings. I always remember Sean before he died. I always associated the song, I suppose, maybe a little bit with myself because of the eagle and the capture of the eagle. But Sean said to me that himself and Noreen Layden, an Irish-American girl who he was friendly with,
said that they actually met Bette Midler, and it was his favorite, that it was their favorite song. So on the day he was being buried in Killarney, from the removal of the church, we had a singer that sang that song, and it was beautiful.
Pat?
And it always rings a bell.
I've sat in front of a lot of people across the studios of Radio Kerry. I've been lucky enough to do it. It's been my greatest honour and privilege to sit across from you. Listen, thanks for everything.
Thank you, Uisce. And again, I would like to thank the people of Killarney, and who have been so good to me through the years.